Welcome back to the Laravel podcast. We're back from Laracon EU, and we got a little bit different group with us this week. Jeffrey is off touring Bath and Rome and all sorts of famous and beautiful places while the rest of us are back to work. So we've got a special guest with us, Ian Landsman. Ian, can you just say hi to the folks and introduce yourself real quick?
Hello. Yes, I am Ian Landsman. You've probably seen me in pictures kissing Matt Stauffer.
Oh, I love that picture. I guess I should do that. So Ian is an incredible person. He's influential and been around. I actually decided at one of the Laracons that he is the godfather of Laravel, and you'll hear about that story in a second. But he runs Userscape, and they have a product, HelpSpot, and then also they spun off Be Snappy, and they run LaraJobs. We'll talk about that in a second. And then also, Taylor, you want to say hey?
Hey, I'm Taylor Rotwell, creator of Laravel.
You may have heard of him before. This Taylor guy. Cool. Well, the first thing I wanted us to talk about this week was, Ian, how did you first get connected to the Laravel scene, and why is it that I even call you the godfather of Laravel in the first place? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, I like that. That's a good term. I gotta stick with that one. Put that on the Twitter profile there.
I want to get you a t-shirt.
Yeah, so I don't know. We might have talked about this a long time ago on the podcast, but basically I was looking around for new frameworks in PHP, I guess 3.5 years ago, whatever it was, and came across Laravel. Actually, came across it via a GitHub pull or something that Eric Barnes had done when we were interviewing him to hire him, who still works at Userscape, and found Laravel. And I was like, oh, yes, because I'd been looking at Symfony and pretty much just Symfony, and then there's, yeah, everybody knows all the other ones, but Symfony wasn't really my thing, and came across Laravel, and I was like, holy crap, like, this is exactly what I want. Like, I understand this documentation. It had documentation. The examples in the documentation work the way that they're written out, and it's so clean and simple and wonderful, and yeah, so then poked around a little bit on Taylor and saw he was had a thing that he was looking for a job on Forest or something. I don't even think it was up to date, he said later on, but approached him about working at Userscape, and went from there. And yeah, that was Laravel 1, I guess, or I think it was Laravel 1.
Yeah, early days.
Yep.
I didn't realize it was so early. When I had heard that story a couple times, I always assumed it was a couple of versions in. So that was really early stages of Laravel.
Yeah, very early.
Yeah, like the first few months Taylor worked there, we just built out Q, and he rewrote Eloquent and all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah,
database migrations, because there was no migrations. We built migrations because obviously we had multiple team members at Userscape, and we needed to keep our databases in sync without telling each other what columns to add to the database and stuff.
Yep. So a lot of that enterprise-y kind of stuff made its way in back then, which was really cool, and all stuff we use a lot at Userscape now, and obviously so many other people get the benefit of now. It's so, just clean and wonderful.
It's funny. I've often said that I think that the best advances and the most significant things that happen in Laravel are when Taylor's working on a project and he says, this shouldn't be this much work. I want this to be easier. Like when you hear him talking about where Spark came from or whatever else, it's like, this shouldn't be this much work. I'm tired of doing this. I think everybody else is too. And so it's interesting hearing about, especially those early days of development. I mean, so much happened in the first couple versions. And so it was working in, with Userscape and the products you guys were working on at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where a lot of it, came from. Give them that experience of using it in a live environment versus just kind of side project stuff and things we plan to do with it with HelpSpot, and then with building out Snappy, you really start to dig in there on all kinds of weird edge cases and more sophisticated things you need to do. So I think that was good for the early days of Laravel there in that regard, to kind of get that real world usage. And my favorite story is the time he rewrote Eloquent. Like, we were trying to do something, we were going to use Doctrine because Eloquent couldn't do, the stuff we needed to do. And he worked on that for a week or two, or I don't remember how long. And then he was like, I can't take it. And he just went off and into some, I imagined him just like in this Tupac song, he talks about going blind and just letting God write for him. And that's how I picture Taylor rewriting Eloquent. It was 2 days, and he just was I just imagined him in this fugue state, and he just woke up from it and it was done. That's how it was. Yeah. That's how it seemed anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, we had tried to use Doctrine, and this was actually 3 years ago or so, and it couldn't do arbitrary conditions on a left outer join. That was actually the reason that a new version of Eloquent got written.
That put them over the edge.
Say that 10 times fast.
Good.
So we've already learned from just the first couple minutes of the podcast that Ian loves 90s hip hop and movies. So we'll delve into these later in the podcast, but you got your introductions there.
Exactly.
So, well, I know that often when we've talked about things in the past and we've either said, oh, Ian should have been on this version of the podcast, or, you know, just stuff that you've been more vocal about on Twitter, it's often having to do with, as a business owner, what it looks like to hire and interact with, and we've already talked about this so far a little bit, developers. And how do you manage developers, and do you sell SaaSes towards developers, and what do you care about in a developer, and what does and doesn't matter? And I think a lot of the conversations we tend to have online center around folks, you know, I won't choose any particular terms, but the people who tend to be more on the, you know, hey, we're being pragmatic and side, and I forget what Paul said, but basically academic or architect-y or whatever you want to call them, these kind of two different battles. And so I think that as a business owner, and you've been in, you know, you've been at this probably longer than a lot of people. I mean, your business has been around and succeeded past the demise of many, many other small software type businesses. It would really just be great to hear from you about what are your priorities when you're looking at working with developers, hiring developers, you know, interact with them on a daily basis. What are the things that you value and what makes them hireable? And what are you looking for from a developer as a business owner?
Yeah, I mean, HelpSpot and UserScape have been around for 10 years in October, which is in internet years, like 150, obviously. And so seen a lot of stuff. I definitely tend to fall more on the pragmatic side of things. I come very much from the entrepreneurial side of it, and much less from the architecture side of it. So we're on Twitter, a lot of times the disputes end up falling into, you know, the right way, quote unquote, to, you know, develop something and long-term thinking in terms of software development, which is important. And I hate it. I hate that I often come off as like totally dismissing that, because I definitely think it's important. But at the same time, if your business isn't around in 10 years, then worrying about what's going to happen to your code in 10 years is kind of silly. So I do think developers tend to over-prioritize that and get too caught up in picking the right pattern or, you know, single responsibility and all these things and re-architecting it for scaling and all this stuff, when most of that stuff is completely irrelevant unless you actually are going to still be around in a couple of years when you have 1,000 customers. So, you know, I'm usually more worried about having 1,000 customers who are paying me and then hitting some growing pains over worrying about what happens when we get those 1,000 customers and we don't have any yet. So that's just where that balance is. And that's, you know, what I love about Laravel, right, is that it's so much easier now to have scalable, architecturally sound code, even if you do all the nasty stuff, you use facades and you do all the things you shouldn't do. Even if you do those really horrible, horrible things, right? you're still in like 100 times better place than you would have been definitely 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Yeah. If you just built a PHP app up from scratch. So you get a lot of that stuff for free now that before, yeah, you really had to think about. So
what's your, we've talked a little bit on Telegram amongst ourselves about, you know, there's sort of personal skills and technical skills. And I remember when I would take people on interview lunches before I worked at UserScape, and that was sort of one of my jobs, was to feel out like their personal and communication skills. You know, how do you do that, managing remote devs? What do you have, like a little checklist of things you're looking for, or a list of things that like is instant?
Right.
This person is off the list. We're never hiring them.
Right. Yeah. That's such an interesting area too, because it's very like, there's, if you're coming from a big corporate background, right, there's, you know, you might be hiring somebody who's responsible for one class, literally, like this is your job, is to manage this class and make it better, or a very small slice of the application. But most of the people in our circles generally are smaller companies where the developers, you know, have much wider responsibilities, whole projects, multiple projects. oftentimes working remotely as we do at Userscape. And so, you know, I think the kind of social aspects there and how they fit into the team is so critical, because you can't just have a guy who's, or a woman, who's, you know, buried in the basement and they're just responsible for this bit of code, and doesn't matter if they don't interact well with the other humans because it's very specific what they have to do. So yeah, there's a few things I like to look for, definitely, at least for Userscape. A kind of entrepreneurial spirit, that's something that everybody at Userscape has. Basically everybody has run their own business, or at least has side projects that are for sale. So pretty much everybody is doing something commercially, even outside of their job at Userscape, because I think that already puts you in the right mindset for that small company kind of many hats thing. Definitely just a personality that jives with the rest of the team, whatever that is for your team, but that's a really important factor, because if they don't get along with everybody else, and especially in a small group, then it creates so much disruption amongst the team and your productivity is killed, because you don't have 20 developers, and if a few are disgruntled, things kind of still move. It's like if you have two developers and one is throwing a wrench in the works, that just shuts you down completely. So kind of a flexible personality, and flexible with what you can ask them to do. You know, at Userscape, a lot of times we have to do things that aren't fun. Like Taylor, right before he left, started a new back office, and Eric finished that. So this is a whole infrastructure for selling HelpSpot. And this is not, you know, the funnest work in the world. It's not sexy. It's not exposed to really anybody other than our customers for buying licenses of HelpSpot. But it's so critical, and ties into so many other things. And I mean, it's a platform for HelpSpot Cloud, which is a new product we rolled out. And so, you know, you have to be willing to jump between the fun stuff of working on the product and, you know, the less glamorous but just as important kind of back office stuff.
So, yeah, that's a really good point. So let's say that we have some listeners and that they want to get hired. And let's just pretend that Userscape has a job up on Lara Jobs. I'm not sure if they do or not, actually. But what are a couple things they could do to, like, get noticed? If they're submitting their resume on Lara Jobs, you know, what can they do to jump to the front of the pack, sort of?
Yeah, definitely. So this is a huge thing. We have had a job recently. It wasn't for a developer, but a job up on Lara Jobs that touches on some Laravel stuff. And this, a lot of this is really applies to anytime you're applying for a job. But the things I see, I mean, I see so much horrible stuff. It's just painful. To me, right off the bat, the first thing is you have to read the job description and like really understand what the people want. Cause I get so many, like our recent role we had was for basically a support programmer or a support engineer, somebody to work in support, but a more technical person to do that. And I mean, we just get resumes and cover letters that are for, you know, PHP developer, Python developer. I read your description carefully for your, you know, administrative thing. It's like, it doesn't, so obviously right there, you just throw those away, because if you can't even read the job description, then forget it. Beyond that, you know, to me, it's all about that first impression. So having a great cover letter that's custom to the job you're applying for, I think is super important. And everybody hates this advice, because you want to apply to a bunch of different jobs, and it takes a long time to write a good cover letter, and to write 10 good cover letters that are custom to each job is a lot of work. But those just stand out so much when you're the hiring manager and you get 50 emails and 48 of them are, here's my resume attached, and two of them are a really nicely well-written cover letter. And that is just, those two instantly are top of the pack, regardless of what the resume even says. And then, you know, then you can go into the resume, and I have infinite tips on resumes, but it just even that point of really focusing in on the cover letter, you know, going to the company's website, read how Userscape was founded, read about the other team members, go find the stuff we do. I mean, you know, in our case, in most companies' cases, we're all over the internet. You could pick out a couple items there that just show you did the tiniest bit of research to see if it was a good fit for you, and to show that you have that interest. And that's the kind of starting point for everything.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and segue into maybe our second section of this podcast. Let's just say, for example, you get a job applicant and they just feel very strongly that Star Wars Episode 2 is the greatest of all the Star Wars episodes.
This is a clean transition.
So what would your reaction? Are they an automatic no hire?
Oh, man, I don't know. So
they've got to be. I mean, how can you believe you can't trust this person in any other area of life?
That's true. They think that's the greatest movie. Right? It might be better to just say you haven't seen them at all. You know, like that's a safer bet. If you get into movies, that's very politicized.
Yeah, it's almost better to be a liar.
Right. But see, that's a great example, right? Because they would know if they're following me on Twitter, which they should be, because we are. It's very clear who's hiring at Utescape, and they would have seen my recent rants about how my feelings on that, and at least reference that. That's a great jumping off point for a cover letter.
That's true. Following the company you're interested on Twitter, that's a good point to get kind of used to what their culture, what they like.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny because we have this joke at Userscape, kind of inside joke Taylor's referencing, where I'm big into movies, and Eric and Taylor haven't seen all the movies that maybe I feel like they should have seen. So we would banter about that a lot, but Taylor has seen all the Star Wars, so I will give him that. Eric hasn't even seen all the Star Wars, which is
mind-boggling.
I don't know how I got hired. That was before I implemented the movie rule. We now have a movie rule of check sheet of movies you have to have seen in order to be eligible to work here.
Nice.
So would you put that check sheet online so that if somebody wanted to apply there, they could do like a binge watch like a weekend where they just binge watched all the
I feel like you could probably develop that list if you just mine just my Twitter feed, you know, like it's all in there. I mean, I'll let people cheat here. I mean, I think you pretty much have to have seen Star Wars, all the Star Wars, even the new ones, and because you have to know that they're horrible.
Oh, man. You have to be able to talk about how bad they are in terms.
Exactly. The Godfather, that's a key one. And Godfather 2, of course. The Matrix, that'd be a key one. Rounders.
Wall Street, which I haven't seen.
You've seen The Matrix.
Oh. No, I haven't seen Wall Street.
Oh, yeah, Wall Street is the other huge one, yes. You have to have seen Wall Street. Wall Street is like, I don't even know how you can run a business without seeing Wall Street. It's just like...
I've never seen Wall Street.
Oh, you're killing me.
I'm fired.
Not the new one either. That new one is stupid. The 80s one. Gordon Gekko. Everybody go see Wall Street.
Oh, I've heard that name a lot of times before, so.
Oh, classic. Classic.
All right.
Your business will double after you watch that movie.
Nice. So I know we have a little more Star Wars to talk about. Sorry, Taylor. I wanted to say one thing about it is that I think one of the things we've said here that's worth emphasizing is that if you're thinking about working for a company for the next couple years of your life and they have the ability to either get you in a place where you can pay for rent or not, to pay enough attention to learn a little bit about the corporate culture, to do a little bit of research, or at least to read the thing, is not a lot to ask. And of course, as like people who've hired, like, you know, oh, well, we're being so selfish. But like when we get job applications that have some other company's name at the top, which happened to me twice last time we hired.
All the time.
And I'm like, could you not even proofread? Or when there's spelling mistakes, or when there's grammar mistakes, or when you have, you know, applied for what's clearly not the right fit or whatever. All we see is, I took one thing and I spent an hour writing it and I blasted it out to 40 people.
Yeah.
And if we are similarly about to commit to basically like hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next couple of years paid to this person who are going to give a whole bunch of responsibility and put them, you know, in direct contact with our most important clients, and you don't care about us enough to just read about, you know, who we are and what we're doing, it, you know, that sends a message. So I appreciate you saying that, Ian, because I think there's something to be said about like, this is like the person we happened to hire for our last job, Adam Wathen, his application was, it's online somewhere, I'll try and reference it.
Yeah.
He built a custom website for his application to Titan that referenced internal Titan jokes. It referenced conversations he's had when he met people who worked at Titan. It had like him and Batman in various places. And he clearly put like a weekend's worth of work into it. And I'm not saying it was just that got him the job, but like that level of dedication saying, this is where I want to work and this is what I do. It shows a lot, right? About someone who's applying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that I referenced that before, and that's a great example. I mean, somebody who goes to that length it's almost impossible to not get noticed and at least get you past that first phase of getting noticed, which is so hard. And I also think there's something to be said about thinking about, if you're thinking about applying for a job, understanding if you're applying to a small company, because a small company is very different from applying into a big board organization. So, you know, this is going to be probably, you know, a founder or a couple of co-founders. It's going to be their personal business that is not like a manager in a bigger company who, you know, this is our baby, right? This is the business we've fostered from a small, tender idea, you know, into this bigger thing, and we love it and we care for it. And so we take it a lot more personally than, you know, just the hiring manager in the developer department at, you know, big company X. And, you know, it's our money that is going, it comes out of our pocket, literally. And so there's a different aspect there. And I personally try not let that factor in, right? Because I'd say, okay, you know, I try to be businessy about it and say, this is our revenues and this is what we can afford. And this is the positions we need. But at the same time, you know, there is always that little inkling there that at the end of the day, this is money that, you know, we're putting out that we could just put in our pocket instead. But no, we're going to put it into people to grow the business. And we want to have the right people, make sure we're investing in the right people for that. I also think that, you know, there's other things that a little company can do. If you are a little company, one of the things to think about is that, how to differentiate yourself from those big companies, because you can't always, you know, outpay them on the surface. So, you know, definitely could developers at UserScape go work at Google for more money? Absolutely. So, you know, but what are the other things that you can offer? And make sure you highlight those. Can you have things like, obviously working remotely is huge, which a lot of companies don't allow. Can you do things like allow people to have side projects, which is another thing a lot of companies don't allow. And I think that, I mean, I personally like love side projects, and sometimes like Taylor is on this podcast with us, right? I mean, his side project blossomed into something big enough that took him out on his own, which is really cool. And I love to see that and have been part of that and the place to foster that. So I think there's, different things you can offer that are appealing to people beyond just how much the salary is. And that's another thing to think about when you're hiring from the small business perspective.
That's really helpful. And I know that that Taylor made the perfect segue into Star Wars a second ago, and I just stole it back to job stuff, but we have more Star Wars to talk. So lest I take up all the time with job stuff, I had to admit to the guys before we talked that, so I watched Star Wars 4, 5, 6 growing up. My parents read Lord of the Rings to us, and we watched Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Deep Space Nine growing up. But I never kind of like got really deep into Star Wars, right? I watched 4, 5, and 6 a whole bunch of times growing up. I watched 1, 2, and 3 and thought they were abysmal, and then just tried to wipe them from my memory, and that's it. And I think all these people are kind of like really following in kind of what's going on and what's next in Episode 7. So I want to hear you guys. Well, first of all, I got to let you know, my wife has never seen any Star Wars ever. So I'm trying to get her to see 4, 5, 6 before 7 comes out. And I'm probably just going to skip 1, 2, 3 entirely. But okay, so I don't know anything about it other than I saw one preview and it looked awesome. Tell me about Episode 7. Like, what's coming? What's going on? What are you excited about? What are you terrified about?
Well, I mean, just one thing on your wife. This is a serious situation we have with your wife. Because before I got married, my wife had a series of movies she had to watch before we were allowed to get married. Those should be on. Obviously, Star Wars has to be on that list. We also had The Great Escape. Have you guys seen The Great Escape?
I haven't. Oh, no. Oh my gosh.
Classic.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh! Classic movie from the 60s. She calls it Dirt in the Pockets. I made her watch it, but it's a World War II movie. Steve McQueen. Gotta watch that. Strange Brew. Have you seen Strange Brew?
I haven't seen any of these movies.
Oh, it's a movie about beer.
What podcast is this?
see, Ian's been talking about starting a movie podcast for ages, and he's really just trying to turn this into it.
That would be so popular. I can't wait for that to happen. Any movies, TV series, both.
We got to do that. I got to do that. I got to make some time. I'm trying to free up some time. It has to happen. Or we just turn this into it. Like, we just call it the Laravel Podcast, but it's really just a new movie every week.
So my wife will watch Star Wars, and I told her it's happening before Episode 7 releases. Okay. So somehow I'm going to cram 3 episodes of Star Wars in before Episode 7.
Just take a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have on the list here of questions. I'll just throw these out. It's kind of two related questions. One, what would make episode 7 just totally amazing? And then two, what would make it absolutely terrible? Like, what's your best and worst case scenarios?
I mean, I think we can assume that the audience has at least seen the trailer, right? We're going to go with that.
Yeah, sure.
I think so, yeah.
I don't know. What can make it awesome? I mean, I think it's already, having just watched one of the prequels yesterday and it being so fresh in my head, I can't imagine that it could possibly be worse. I just don't think it could be worse, you know, and knowing that it's J.J. Abrams, and if anything, J.J. Abrams is, maybe he's like too concerned with plot kind of tying up and things like that, whereas like the prequels are so, I mean, every scene is a giant plot hole and it's horrific. So if anything, right, like it might be too confusing this with J.J. Abrams. Like maybe there'll be too much weird stuff that all fits together crazy at the end, and it might be overkill for Star Wars. But I feel like it can't be worse than the prequel. And if they go back to the real special effects, which, you know, they've made pretty clear that they're going to go back to more physical special effects. And I don't know, have you guys seen Mad Max Fury Road? I mean, yes. That was a lot of, you know, real, there's a lot of CGI too, but a lot of physical effects. That was just an amazing movie. And so I feel pretty confident that it'll at least be okay.
Yeah, it can only go uphill, you feel like.
Yeah, I feel like.
Well, it's funny because I was going to make a joke that, like, oh, if they brought Jar Jar Binks back or whatever. But it was funny because Ian actually live tweeted watching through episode 2 last night. And it reminded me of how many other pieces were bad that I just try to, like, wipe from my memory. And the ability to bring every single piece of that badness back in episode 7 would have to basically be, like, an intentional decision. Right? Like, it probably just cannot be done.
Like, it just opens with, like, a giant troll face, you know? And it's just, like, the ultimate troll.
And what's his name singing, never gonna Let You Down? Right,
yeah. I mean, yeah, I think they would I can't imagine it'd be worse. I mean, I can still be disappointed. There is this factor of, like, can it possibly live up to expectations? And to a certain regard, like, maybe it can't, you know? But I still think it won't be worse than the old ones. I think that's impossible.
Yeah, I feel like he's in a good spot as far as the expectations go, because we just got three horrible, crappy movies.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
as long as he puts out a decent, watchable movie. If it's not good, like, I feel like there's going to be, like, grown men crying in the theater. Like, with their dreams shattered if it's totally bad.
That'll be me. That'll definitely be me. But, I mean, I don't know, just the trailer. I mean, when the trailer opens, and since we're assuming we've seen the trailer, like, when it comes on the Star Destroyer in the sand, I mean, I was literally, jumping up and down and, like, yelling.
I have goosebumps right now thinking about it.
I mean, it was so exciting. And I'm like, just that level of detail, I just feel like if you just even that detail, like, that's all I needed to see, and I felt like, all right, it's gonna be okay. We got somebody who cares.
The number of people I know that tweeted that they cried at that trailer, like, blew my mind. And they were joking. They're like, I literally cried. It was
Yeah, it was perfect. It was like one of the great trailers of all time. Now, I mean, even just living up to the trailer is going to be difficult. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's going to be one of those ones. All the good moments are in the trailers. Even so, it would be better than the first three episodes.
Yeah, yeah. So. I feel like we're on solid footing of it not being worse than the prequels. Being over the top, I mean, to make it better than, like, I mean, I don't know your guys' order. What's your guys' order on, 4, 5, and 6 in terms of?
I would say 5, 4, 6. So Empire Strikes Back is the best, then A New Hope, and then Return of the Jedi. I'm not really a big fan of Return of the Jedi because I think the Ewoks are stupid. Like, to me, that's Jar Jar Binks.
They're kind of gimmicky, yeah.
Yeah, I agree, I think. It's a little close to me. I kind of block out the Ewok stuff a lot, and there are some things I like. Like, I like the final battle. I like the It's a Trap, and I like some of the stuff in the beginning.
The beginning is good with Jabba's palace and the boat and all that.
Yeah, especially in the more original, like, they add a bunch of stupid stuff to make you laugh in there in the redone ones, but in the more pure original version, like Jabba's palace and all that stuff. So I thought all that's pretty good. So close call, but probably A New Hope, just since it was so revolutionary, is my next favorite. But yeah, I don't know. For it to be better than Empire, I think, is a tall order, but it could definitely sneak in, into second place, I think.
Yeah. For me, it would be just totally awesome. For me, like, the thing I'm looking forward to is if if Luke Skywalker is just the most bad A dude like you've ever seen, but like he's not, but he's not trying, like he's not even trying to be. That would be my favorite part.
I have no idea what they're gonna do with like Luke. Like I just can't fathom how they're gonna bring. I mean, I think Han Solo is the most clear how they might rework him back in, right? But the other guys, I mean, I don't know. It's
you know, where I read this really. I read this really interesting interview response with J.J. Abrams where he said when he was deciding like whether or not to do Star Wars, the thing that like really pulled him in is this question of who is Luke Skywalker, which I found really interesting because to him it's not as clear cut. Like, who is this guy whose dad was Darth Vader and killed a bunch of people and then he like watched his dad die and all that? Like, this guy might be more troubled, I think, than like than people might realize.
I agree. I actually just saw this thing just last night also that was kind of fascinating, where Luke Skywalker apparently in the original kind of manuscript, he was actually supposed to become, I don't want to say the S word, but he was supposed to become an evil, go to the dark side at the end of the movie. And you know, they obviously switch that up and he ends up good and he has the reunion with his last moments with his father, and that's all touching. But so, yeah, maybe he comes off as more of someone conflicted between the light and the dark and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Especially when you think back to that Empire Strikes Back scene where he's, like, in the Dagobah forest and he sees, like, that vision of Vader and it's his face in the mask and stuff. Like, that's, they could tie some of that stuff back in and make Luke a little bit more ambiguous or at least kind of tortured by his family history.
I definitely see that.
Well, especially...
I was just going to say also because he was, you know, he's the person who's supposed to bring balance to the Force. And if his balance, that implies that he's on the light and the dark and not just the pure good guys. So,
especially with JJ, we know he knows how to tell kind of nuanced stories, right? And the idea that just like Luke is just all good all the time, right? He went through his first little cathartic process where he was a little bit of a rebel and now he's just great forever.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, time has passed, right? Has he just stayed like just superhero great all the time? Probably not, right? And to be honest about those kind of aspects of every person, I think is something JJ's really good at. So
I'm really just looking forward to the first third of the movie too, because I think there's going to be so much in there about you know, like, so it ends, the last one ends and it's like everybody's happy and the Empire's defeated and just seeing how they bring them back into the fold, and I think they'll try to tie that together really strongly and make that really believable. So I'm curious to see how they, you know, create this new empire and how that all works out. So that'll be cool.
Curious to see if they, one of the things I loved about Battlestar Galactica is that they flip at some point during the show. You realize that your favorite characters have been the ones that are actually in power. And so there's some episodes in Battlestar where they start like poking at that, being like, well, have they always used their power responsibly? And you answer, of course, right? They're the protagonists.
Right.
They must have. And then there's some people who are like, no, no. And so there's something about like, even when you're the good guys and you're the ones who've rescued and saved everything, that doesn't mean you can always do only good, right? So yeah, I'm super excited to see that.
Battlestar Galactica, so, that's one I have to watch. I've never watched that. And I got to get better about my Star Trek. I have seen half of the new Next Generation there and I've seen most of the movies, but I gotta get back. I gotta sit down and go through them all and take that all in.
I wouldn't worry about the movies yet. I mean, I want to hear from you, Taylor, because I watched them as a kid. So but my guess would be because I watched it this way, I would just say watch through Next Generation the whole way, watch through DS9 the whole way, watch through Voyager the whole way. That's what I would recommend to somebody.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing, but it's taken me two years to get through Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Watching maybe two episodes a week, you know, not very much, two or three episodes a week.
Yeah, there's so much of it. That's the thing. It's like like you can't take it on. It's like I don't even have time to watch like our 1 hour shows, you know, Game of Thrones or whatever the things we watch now, like here and there. It's like an hour a week is hard, and I don't know, like taking on a 3 year project to watch Star Trek feels like work.
Yeah, I feel like once Star Wars comes out, we're definitely going to have to bring Ian back for maybe like an hour long Star Wars recap.
We're going to need more time.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we could clearly talk about Star Wars all day, but we're way over time. So before we cut out for today, clearly, Ian, you're coming back to talk more about this. How can folks who love listening to you, how can they stay connected to you? How can they pay you money? How can they get involved in what you're doing in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm all over the place, but you know, our main stuff is HelpSpot.com, and then of course we run LaraJobs at LaraJobs.com. So if you're looking for work, take a look, or if you're looking to find Laravel devs, that's the spot. And we talked about remote work a bit on the podcast, and I have some more stuff coming up in the remote work space in the future, I think, as well. So that's an early project. I'll tease it a little bit here, but more info on remote work in general kind of be coming out of Userscape in the future, so stay tuned.
You also have a couple newsletter and type things.
Yeah.
Are they still going?
Nah. Go to LarryJobs.com. Sign up for that newsletter.
All right. All right. Well, Ian, it's been a total pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us and gracing us with your wisdom. And the rest of you don't have video, but we are talking with video. So thank you for just kind of putting that beautiful mug right there, just, you know, for the duration of the last half hour. guys, it was a pleasure talking to you all. Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
Nope.
All right. Until next time, Laravel Podcast. We'll see y'all later.
Thanks. Yeah.